Luke 24, verse 25. Then he said unto them, O fools, and slow of heart to believe all that the prophets have spoken. Ought not Christ to have suffered these things and to enter into his glory? Jesus said, O fools, and slow of heart to believe. O fools, and slow of heart to believe. You know, I think we need to give a little bit more importance to the Lord's opinion on things. We kind of give a lot of importance to other people's opinions, and here the Lord is expressing an opinion of His own. The Lord is saying, O fools and slow of heart to believe. He's calling some of His disciples fools. The Lord at one time said that you shouldn't call somebody a fool lightly. These are fighting words. This is an insult. He's saying, you're a fool if you're slow to believe. Now, he's talking, of course, here about the resurrection. And he's telling people who should have believed by then. I don't know if you know how it all worked out, but if you stop and think about some of the unbelief that happened in the time of the resurrection, it is surprising. Maybe you feel like you can sympathize with the apostles for being somewhat unbelieving, being somewhat slow of heart, not quite ready to commit themselves in a difficult situation. We can sympathize because we're like them in too many ways in that instance. But Jesus had a different point of view, and he said, "You're a fool if you were slow to believe." Now he's talking to two people who were intimately connected with him. One of them was the son of one of the women that was at the foot of the cross, Cleopas. These men had followed Jesus along during his ministry. They were intimately connected. They were right there with him all the way down to the end. And then something happened. The ladies went to the tomb to anoint the body of Jesus or to do some type of preparation for his body after he had been dead 3 days, laid in the tomb 3 days and three nights. And so they're getting ready to do it, and they find out that the tomb is empty. The stone is rolled away from the door. The guards have gone. And they run and tell Peter and John, and Peter and John run to the sepulcher. And they look inside the sepulcher. And John, it says, at that time believed. Now, you stop and think, John believed in the resurrection of Jesus Christ when he saw the sepulcher empty. Now that's an interesting thing, because he's the first one of them that believed. The women didn't believe, and Peter and John didn't believe when they were told that the tomb was empty, even though Jesus Christ had warned them that he's going to rise again from the dead many times. So many times, in fact, that even his enemies knew about it, and that's why they put a guard at the tomb. They put a guard at the tomb because they said that deceiver said he was going to rise again. And so his enemies knew about this prophecy. And they said, we're going to have a worse mistake on our hands if they come and steal his body and then say he rose again from the dead. So we're going to put guards all around his tomb. And they did that. They put guards all around the tomb. Now this is an interesting thing, because his enemies knew about this. Jesus had warned them that he was going to rise again from the dead. And then come the women to the tomb, see that it's empty, and they think somebody stole the body. Now that's interesting. Who would steal the body? And why would they steal the body? And why would they want the dead body? Only as believers. You know, these people were intimately connected with all the believers. They knew. They knew exactly where they were. They run and tell the disciples, somebody has stolen the body. And it doesn't dawn on them. What happened here? The body's gone. The tomb is empty. It's been 3 days and three nights. Nobody could have stolen the body. It was guarded. There was a rock in front of it. Even the women were worried. How are we going to get the rock off the tomb? How are we going to get the door away? How are we going to get in? They were worried about that. Nobody stole the body. Somebody wake up. Somebody start paying attention to the facts of the case. These are his disciples. And the ladies come and tell him, somebody stole the body. They run to the body. Why? I guess they're afraid that they lost the body. What are we going to do now without the body of Jesus Christ? Without the cadaver? Without the corpse? Without the dead body? What are we going to do? We don't want to lose that. Why? What are we going to do? Are we going to make a monument out of it? Are we going to make some kind of important thing out of the body? No, it's meaningless. Just another dead body. They run to the tomb. And it says that John outran Peter. He stopped at the door of the tomb, looked in, and it said he believed. It dawned on John. But you notice he did not believe the word of someone else. He had to see it himself. We didn't get a chance to see it. We have to believe the word of somebody else. But John didn't believe. He's the best one. He's the first one. He's the one that stayed with Jesus all the way through the cross. And he's the first one to believe after. That's something, but still you got to stop and think, why, John, didn't you just not run? Just sit down and start praising the Lord. Start thanking God that He fulfilled His promise. Why are our hearts so dull when it comes to God's promises? Or to God's point of view? Or to God's opinion about something? He says he didn't believe till he got there and he saw. Peter still didn't know. Peter saw Jesus himself later on in the day. But you know something? It says Jesus Christ appeared to the disciples in the room, and one of them was missing. Jesus actually appeared to them in the room, spoke to them, ate with them, proved that he was alive in the room. Now, if you actually do the timeline and mark out who's here and who's there and who's where and where they must have gone, it's kind of a little mystery where Thomas was. But apparently he just stepped out because he was there just a little bit before that. And he was there a little bit after that. So apparently Thomas had just stepped out, went to the corner store to buy ice or chips or something. Who knows where he was, what he was doing. It was obviously not, you know, a long time. He stepped out. He's gone. Jesus appears, eats with them, has a good time of fellowship. And they apparently didn't realize it, but then Thomas comes up and walks in, dusts his feet off, offers them chips or something. And he says, hey, they say, we saw the Lord. We saw the Lord. Now, Thomas has been with these people years, preached the gospel with these people, lived like them, had the same faith as them, watched Jesus taken away, watched him suffer, heard all his prophecies. And then finally, you have 10 of these men that have been with him all this time saying, we just saw him. He just left. We didn't have a divided testimony. We had 10 men say, we saw him. They knew who he was. He ate with us. He was right here. And Thomas said, I won't believe. I will not believe until I've seen him myself. Now that's pretty stubborn. That is unbelief. That's just plain stupid unbelief. Because this is enough. This is enough evidence. Stop and think. You remember in school when you went to math class and they would give you these real life problems in your math textbook? You know, Amy had 12 apples and she sold them for 25 cents a piece until there was only two left, and somebody offered her 25 cents for the last two. So how much did each apple cost on average? You know, sometimes you read those kind of stories and you think, there's just not enough information here to come up with the answer. I know you've had that experience because I've had that experience. You're reading this story that they tell you and you think, wait a minute, that's not enough information. We can't come to the conclusion with just this evidence. You've got to tell me something else. Look at the back of the book, you know, and see what it says. But the truth is, on nearly all of those, there's enough evidence in the problem to come up with the right conclusion. Generally, if a problem like that gets through the editor and the author of the book and through all the publications and all the teachers, and it gets all the way to you, probably the problem is in your thinking. You're not figuring it out. You don't want to put out the effort, or you're just dumb. Not math, you know, you're mathematically challenged. There are some problems here. Let me tell you something. What God is saying is, when you have these kind of witnesses and they're telling you what they've seen, Thomas had no reason to disbelieve. Right. Thomas's unbelief was unreasonable. Right. It was stupid. You had to be stupid not to believe them. You had to be a fool. This is what Jesus said. You're a fool if you don't believe. Right. Oh, fools! And slow of heart to believe. You know, Jesus didn't say, oh my, y'all made a mistake. He said, fools. Fools. You know, there's a difference between foolish and stupid. Stupidity is its own excuse. Because stupid means you're lacking normal intelligence. So if you're stupid, well, that's an excuse. But these people weren't stupid. Fool is a little different. Fool means you had everything you needed to make the right decision, the right conclusion, and for some reason, unreasonable reason, for some fault of yours, you made the wrong decision. That's a fool. A fool is not someone who's stupid. The Bible differentiates between the simpleton and the fool, or the brutish person and the fool. The fool has what it takes. He has all the evidence that he needs. He has the intelligence that is required. He has the time. He has whatever. He has the counsel. But he still makes the wrong decision. He still does something stupid. You like to remember back on the times when you did something stupid? You feel good about those times? Or do you like to forget those things? You want to forget the times when you were stupid, right? Especially when it was extremely foolish of you. I remember we were playing basketball one time, and most of you know me as a very calm and gentle guy that never raises his voice, you know, never gets angry, but some people who know me better, they will tell you that I sometimes can lose my temper. But I was playing basketball one time and something happened. I don't remember what happened or even who I was playing with, but it really bothered me. And I just got upset. And so I took that basketball and I threw it down on the ground. And of course, you know, as basketballs do, they bounce. It bounced up and hit me right in the face. Right in the face. Knocked my glasses off, smashed them, you know. Gave me a sore nose for a long time. You know, you'd think that somebody who plays basketball knows what happens when you throw the basketball down. It kind of bounces, you know. Especially somebody who's really intelligent. That's just stupid, man. You just gotta stop and think, you know, I'm not going to do that again. I don't like that. You've been made a fool of a few times yourself. That's why you're laughing. You're not laughing at me. You're laughing at yourself. You know good and well that you've done the same kind of thing. And you never want that to be brought up again. You know, the worst thing that can happen is to do something stupid in front of Michael. Because he won't forget it. He'll laugh about it. He'll make all kinds of pictures of you doing it, you know. Nobody wants to be remembered as a fool. Nobody wants to remember their foolish moments. Nobody wants their foolish moments to be pointed out. Don't point out my stupid moments. Point out my bright moments, my best moments. Everybody wants to be remembered for the smart things they said, not for the dumb things they said. You ever been in a conversation where you're having this conversation and you're hearing everybody talk and everybody's putting in their two bits and you finally get a chance to say something and you get it about halfway said, somebody else interrupts and what you said sounded really stupid. You feel like, boy, I never get a chance to show off how smart I am. It is. It's very frustrating. You have that problem a lot. I know you do, because I do. We all do. We want people to remember how smart we are. Well, let me tell you something. The apostles did something really boneheaded here. They didn't believe. They could have believed. They had enough evidence. They had everything laid out for them. I mean, all the information was in the problem. Laid out for them right there. He said he was going to rise again. He obviously had the power because we saw him raise a whole lot of dead people. We saw him raise up Lazarus after 4 days. He had the power. He said he was going to rise again. Even his enemies knew about it. They put a guard. Nobody stole his body. Here come the ladies are running saying, somebody took his body and we don't know where they put him. And they could have immediately said, well, of course, he rose again. He rose from the dead. We don't need to go to the tomb. We need to go looking for where he might be. We might ought to just wait around here and say, Lord, come, we're waiting for you. Leave the door open. Leave the light on. The Lord's coming. That's the attitude they should have had. But what the attitude they had was, like these two people walking along saying, we thought these women were crazy. That's what they said. They said they thought the women were crazy. You know, they say, if you give a smart aleck enough rope, he'll hang himself. Just let him keep talking. Well, that's what the Lord did. He was walking along with these two folks, and they're talking. These are his disciples. They believe in him, and they're talking. And we saw this, and we saw that, and we saw that, and all the information right along. The conclusion's clear. It should have been obvious. And their conclusion was, we thought those ladies were crazy. And you're funny, because you must be a stranger here. You didn't know all this had happened? Finally, Jesus opens his mouth. He says, you fools. How could you be so stupid? How could you not think things through and come up with the right conclusion? Your unbelief is unreasonable. You're not thinking straight. You have all that you need to come to the right conclusion. You know, the Lord has called people fools before. He said over there in Psalm 14, the fool has said in his heart, there is no God. Now, you know, I can't really sympathize with that kind of fool. I've never believed that. I've never, ever really been able to give any type of credence. I just can't see atheism. Somebody says that this world was not created. I read a couple of scientists, mathematicians really. One of them name was Fred Hoyle. He was a mathematician. The other guy's name I can't pronounce, so I don't know. I won't tell you. But Fred Hoyle. These guys were mathematicians, and they did some calculations and figured out that there's just not enough time for molecules to join together and do all this stuff until they finally turn into a people. They just figured out there's not enough time. Of course, they didn't have to go to all that trouble. They could have come up with that a lot easier. But they did do the calculations and said, there's not enough time for it all to happen. So they came up with the theory called panspermia, which means we came from outer space. Some people have a hard time of it. Unbelief is unreasonable. We were created. We were created. Listen, this is something you don't need a whole lot more evidence on. You ever seen a sunrise? You ever seen a flower, tree, a mountain? We were created. Listen, let me tell you something. Anybody who winds up getting to the end of their life and they still think that there is no God or that there was no creation is a fool. God said that. And I agree with him. I don't sympathize with fools like that. Other people I can sympathize with. You know, I have some sympathy for some people because I don't see everything from God's point of view. Sometimes I look at things from my point of view and I wonder. But the wisdom that we would have now is to start looking at things from God's point of view. And God said, you're a fool. You're a fool if you don't believe in creation. What was it that Peter said about those that don't believe in the flood? Willingly ignorant. They like to be stupid. They prefer ignorance. I really get a kick out of people who don't believe in the flood. The flood of Noah. The flood that's mentioned in the Bible. Did you know, I was reading one of the debate things on the internet, one of these debates on flood origins, and this one fellow was trying to prove that the flood could not have happened because there's this one formation in Africa of sedimentary rock that has fossils in it, and he was saying how big it is. It turned out to be about the surface area of the Republic of Mexico. We're talking about one huge sedimentary bed, the bottom of some huge ocean is what they're thinking. And he said it was 10,000 meters deep. Deeper than Mount Everest is tall. 10,000 meters deep. 10 kilometers. Wow. You know what I got to thinking? What kind of flood would cause a sedimentary bed like that? Now he was trying to prove that there were too many animals buried in that. We're talking about cadavers, animals, fossils buried in that. He did his calculations how many millions there were and that he couldn't believe that the continent could have held that many animals at one time. Man, all you got to do is get your calculator and start doing your own figures and you got to realize, man, that was some kind of flood that caused that. You ever seen the Grand Canyon? Little bitty old river down in the bottom? You do your calculator and try to figure out how many millions and millions and millions of years it would take for that river to cause that canyon. I can tell you right now, it couldn't have caused that canyon. All you got to do is look at it. It could not have caused that canyon. That canyon has all kinds of side canyons coming into it with no river at the bottom. Hundreds of miles long. That river didn't cause that. One monstrous flood caused that. You believe people don't believe in the flood? They've got animals buried in rocks all over the world. Averages 3 kilometers deep. Animals buried in rock. And they can't find one place where fossils are being created now. There are no modern fossils. You can't find one. They're not even sure how fossils were made. How it happened. You've been to the Petrified Forest? This was a forest the size of almost New Mexico. The state of New Mexico? It was a forest of sequoia trees. Huge, monstrous trees. And they got uprooted by a flood. The whole forest. Uprooted by a flood and covered in mud. Until they turned into rock. You don't have enough evidence for a conclusion? God told you, there's a flood. And you know what Peter said? They're willingly ignorant. They don't want to believe it. But they're just willingly ignorant. You know, a lot of people have their own opinions. And they probably think we're not so smart. And they're probably right. We aren't so smart, but stupidity is its own excuse. If you're smarter than everybody else, you ought to be able to come to better conclusions. You really ought to stop and think. Don't call yourself all that smart if you're not ready to bear the consequences. You've got enough information to know that the Bible is true. If enough information is already there, it exists. You can tell it's true. Unbelief in this circumstance is unreasonable. It's unreasonable. Psalmist said another time that unbelief in the judgment is unreasonable. Foolish and brutish people don't believe in the judgment. Don't believe that God's going to judge sin. Think that you can get away with all this trash you're doing. All the immorality, all the stealing, all the lying, all the cussing, all the drinking and the drunkenness and the murdering of babies. You think you can get away with that? The Bible said that's unreasonable. You're a fool if you think that. He that planted the ear, can he not hear? He that formed the eye, can he not see? Do you even think for a second that God's not going to judge? That God's going to let you get away with everything? We moved to Morelia 6 or 8 years ago. Time flies and I can't keep count of it. But when we moved there, my youngest daughter was about 9 years old. And when we moved into that neighborhood, a week or so later, came out on the news and they were putting up posters everywhere that a little girl about 10 years old was missing. So everybody's looking for this little girl, 10 years old. Found her about 3 or 4 days later. 10-year-old girl. She had been raped. She had been strangled. And she had been left in a vacant lot.